Hello, and welcome to our second series of No Worries If Not, the PR podcast where we get the lowdown on how leading journalists like to be pitched.
We're your hosts. I'm Rhiannon Evans-Young.
And I'm Amy Mace.
And we work at Crest, a PR agency that works with startups, innovators and VCs. Our guest today is Martin Kimber, producer at Sky News' flagship business show, Ian King Business Live. He's also a gaming reporter for Sky. Before joining Sky in 2020, Martin held a whole range of production roles, including at the Daily Mail and Global. Martin, welcome to No Worries If Not.
Thank you very much for having me. By the way, the show's name is Business Live with Ian King.
Right. So when I was writing that little intro, I really struggled with the syntax of the sentence. And I knew you were going to say that and I swapped it around because it sounded better. Yeah, sorry.
That's
Business Life with Ian King. Martin, I feel like you're already out there fighting the good fight when it comes to encouraging PRs to do better pitching. So thanks for that. It feels a good synergy for the No Worries If Not podcast. Maybe we start with that. What prompted you to start doing those excellent and very useful social media do and don't threads?
So I've actually been pitching guests for a number of years now. Started out in radio, then went to podcasts, then TV. My first job at Sky was booking guests across the whole channel. And when you do that job, you don't really come across that many press releases and you're not pitched a lot when your job is to get MPs on the channel to comment on the big issue of the day, or you're looking for, well, it was COVID professors when I was sort of last booking guests back in those heady days. And then when I went to the business show, then Ian King Live, this thing happened where you start getting an untold amount of emails, an amount of emails that I'd never seen before on a daily basis. I had been warned before, if you work on Ian's show, you are going to be pitched a fair bit. And I thought, oh, yeah, it'll be easy. No problem. But wow, it was a lot. So I then decided there has got to be an easier way of sifting through these, of finding the needle in the haystack, of seeing what's worth picking up and what isn't. And so I started tweeting about stuff I liked to see in interview pitches on email. I put out a format that I think works quite well for broadcast, whether you're pitching for podcast, radio or TV, a format that lets the producer know exactly what you're dealing with. And for someone like me who's dyslexic, and I read at probably about the third of the pace of everybody else, it helps me get through a great many more emails than I would have done previously. And thus was born the PR Twitter threads.
And has it made a difference to the inbox mountain?
No. We still get the same amount of emails every day, which is fine. And if we didn't, we obviously wouldn't have a show. And I am extremely grateful to all the PRs who take the time to pitch us. Even if they're not always successful, it is an important symbiotic relationship that PR has with the media. It's important that we obviously set boundaries between the two, but one would obviously struggle without the other. What has changed is a lot of people have adopted the format. A lot of PRs whose agencies previously had not focused a great deal on broadcast, because broadcast can be a brutal area for PRs to crack. I mean, you could have the best spokesperson and the best story. You could have a beautiful Zoom link lined up in a beautiful picturesque area with B-roll, all in HD and 4K, and we could have it all lined up and Rishi Sunak could call an election and you would be out. And the same goes for us as producers. You know, we line up a show and we hope that general sort of current events don't blow us off course. And in that respect, it's not like you get something into the FT and then it just gets deleted the day later. It's once it's in, it's in. And so I do fully appreciate that it is a really tough gig, cracking broadcasts. And I hope that through a little bit more communication between the two industries, we can streamline that a bit for both sides, really.
Yeah, it's been so helpful for us. I've definitely used that format for other broadcast pitches as well. Do you think that PRs often forget about broadcast, and why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because it's really difficult?
From my experience, when you're an agency, for example, you've got various different clients, to get something into a newspaper, you need a quote, you need a good story, maybe you need some pictures, and that's basically it. To get something on telly, you're running around comparing our diary with yours, you know, you're going to need a really strong embargo for the day. If your spokesperson is not in London and can't come into our studio, you're going to need to set up a reliable, high-quality Zoom link. You know, ideally, something like this studio that we're in with dedicated microphones and cameras and stuff like that. And it's a lot more hassle, and you need to find moving picture B-roll as well, ideally. If you've got Jeff Bezos ready to come on our program and you don't have B-roll, we will forgive that. But 99
we'll
times
wave that one through.
999,000 times, you're going to need really good picture for it. And compared to other forms of PR, I think, yeah, it's a lot more hassle. It's a much bigger payoff, in my opinion, but it's much harder work to do. And I have a lot of respect for the agencies that do it really well. The ones that do it really well are, you're the sort of architect of your own success, really, because the people I've worked with before who I think are reliable, I'm more likely to give perhaps a little bit more time to their pitches than others, because I know in the past they've always delivered. It's a good cycle to be in. And once you can get into the rhythm of it, it can be very fortuitous for both sides.
Yeah. I think that's actually why I personally find Sky and your show easier to pitch, because it feels like there's much more clarity around who's responsible for what. You're trying to get on a BBC programme, there's 72 producers, rolling shifts, you never quite know. Whereas I feel like the Sky's got slightly better organisational structure. It's just a clearer delineation of who's in charge of what. I don't know if you found that moving between different production houses.
Having never worked at the BBC, I can't comment on the BBC. But yes, I think the structure at Sky is very good. There's a big collaborative approach to what stories we do. There are editorial meetings in the morning about what sort of the big stories are of the day. And that ranges everything from the head of Sky to the producers and the runners and whatever else. And so, yeah, we are quite lucky in that we now have a sort of permanent production team on Ian's show. And broadcast rotors, though, they can be tough for PRs to crack. So if you have to work a weekend, then you might get a midweek day off, and then you're pitching someone else, and there's no real way around that, unfortunately. That's just one of the pitfalls of broadcast, and that has applied everywhere I've ever worked in broadcast, except for when I was at the Mail. That was a Monday to Friday job. That was an exception, though, and I remember people in radio from the place I'd moved from before saying, wow, those are good hours.
So talk us through your week. Are there any times of the week that are particularly good for PRs to be pitching, and sort of when are the key editorial meetings?
So the first editorial meeting's in the morning, 7:30, which people hop on to find out what the sort of tone is for the day. In terms of being pitched, unless there's a big breaking story in the morning that wasn't around the night before, I would say best to wait until after the show is done. So we're now on the two show format. So our first show finishes at 12, second show finishes at 5. And given that we book the guests, we build the show, as in I cut the video, I, you know, actually prepare what goes out on screen. Those little name tags at the bottom that you see, I do those, or my editor Piers as well does those. So we do both. So for us, given we don't like have a dedicated guest booker or guest booking department for our show, it's probably better to wait until after the show is done, because we're like rushing around like crazy trying to gotta get this out.
And presumably that's changed a bit now you've got a two-show format. Presumably you had, you're building up to today's show, you do the hour, you regroup, you think about tomorrow, whereas now actually you've got another show to get ready for almost straight away.
It's actually all right. We've got a little bit of a breather afterwards. Got time to go to Pret and grab a sandwich. Other sandwich makers are available. And I think at 12 o'clock or just after 12, once we've sort of come off air and we've had our quick post-match analysis and we're like, that went well, that didn't, then it's probably quite a good time to pitch, because it means we're not super under stress from starting to build the next half hour for the afternoon. And I would say other places I've worked, it kind of works quite similarly. People are often responsible for guest booking and content preparation and output as well. And on those sorts of shows, I would suggest, yeah, best to wait after the show is done.
And how far in advance are you booking guests? Because it's nice to be organised, but presumably you don't want to tie yourself into too many commitments in case something really good or cool comes along a bit closer to the time.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. You know, if you're booked in because it looks really, really good at the time, and then Jeff Bezos comes along and is in town, and we're like, well, we're really sorry, but we're going to have to prioritise something. It's going to vary from broadcaster to broadcaster, show to show. For us, anything sort of a couple of weeks is probably quite a good time. There are some days that are completely empty and some days that we pitched, you know, loads of stuff. Thursdays, for some reason, are rammed. Everyone wants to do everything on a Thursday.
Mm. Noted.
I think everyone comes off the weekend and needs a breather on the Monday. Tuesday, they sort of start preparing for it. Wednesday, they're just about there and they've got everything past compliance. And then they're like, right, let's do it Thursday. Because no one wants to do Friday. You know, weekend starts on Friday. And so Thursday's rammed. Mm. And so, yeah, there is some hair pulling when we get sort of 15,000th pitch for this Thursday.
How did you get into broadcast journalism? Was being in production always the aim?
My journey into journalism was weird in that I did a German with journalism degree and realised that was never going to get me a job.
What's a German, like, as in German journalism or German and with a side of journalism?
I'm trying to think how honest I'm supposed to be. So I'm actually bilingually German. My mum's German.
It wasn't.
And I didn't know what I wanted to do at uni. So I thought, if I do German as a foreign language,
I'm going to smash it.
That'll give me a bit more time for extracurricular interests. So I did that. But I thought, well, that would be ridiculous if I just did that. So I threw in a module of journalism each year as well. It wasn't accredited. It didn't give me like an NCTJ or any of those sorts of things. And so I did that for 4 years, had an Erasmus year in Germany, which was great. And then I did a year of marketing and got sacked because I was really bad. Every account I touched, the line on the graph just went, it was like, it was really bad. And so I did a law conversion course because my godfather's barrister and said, you should do this. And given I had sort of very little else going on, I was like, well, fair enough.
I think everyone has the law conversion course like moment in there. Yeah. They're like, maybe I should just be a lawyer.
Yes. Not a particularly good reason for doing it, but, you know, it occupied a year. And then one day I was particularly bored studying land law because I don't think anyone has ever not been bored studying land law. And I emailed my favourite LBC presenter, who was Ian Dale and remains one of my favourites to this day. And I said, you know what, one day when I'm done with law, I'd quite like to sort of explore media as a career choice. And he replied saying he was bad at advice over email. Why don't I come in and shadow a show? And I did.
Wow.
And without asking me, he put me forward for assistant producer shifts, answering the phones to the people who ring up LBC with their various views. And I loved it. That day that I went in to shadow a shift, you know, when every atom of your body resonates at the same frequency as every other atom in the room. And you're like, this is where I was born to be. And I just thought, yeah, this is it.
Oh, wow.
And so on the night of my final law exam, did that and then went in for an overnight shift at LBC and the rest was history. You know, when you catch that bug,
it doesn't
leave you.
So all your broadcast production skills, that's all self-taught, all the like the software, the editing, everything, stuff that people learn on their like broadcast journalism degrees. You've done all that.
It has been my view that journalism doesn't necessarily require a degree. I know lots of people with journalism qualifications and degrees, and they are incredibly good at their jobs, and I can only hope to be as good. I don't think that you really, really need a master's. I'm sure it's extremely beneficial, but I've always thought that journalism is a bit more of a trade than a profession, and everything I learned at LBC was from just being a massive radio nerd. And you carry some of that over to when you do podcasts, and then you carry that over to when you do TV. And systems and software you can learn, but that curiosity and that need to kind of want to know what's going on and to tell people about it, that's an inherent thing that you can't teach. And when you meet the people who are really, really plugged into sort of the news agenda, it shows, it's really obvious, the people who are super passionate about it. And those are the people who are just head and shoulders above, you know, anyone else because they just really care.
Do you think it's quite a different set of skills you need to do broadcast journalism compared to like print?
Having never worked in print, I couldn't be completely confident about that. But I do write articles for the website about video games and tech from time to time. And it is a completely different ball game. Writing for TV is a completely different practice than writing for a newspaper. So when you write an intro for a news sequence, or you write a sort of news in brief, but you know, how do you condense 500 words of copy into 20 seconds of script? that informs everyone, but also keeps it brief and keeps it interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very similar to our job when the client's there with their like precious company baby and they want to tell the world everything and every nuance. And we're like, we'd like to get that down into two sentences and make it really applicable and on a human level. And it feels very alien to them, but like that's the job, right? You're translating for audiences.
The elevator pitch is tough.
Yeah.
When you've got an SME, I mean, you know, SME doesn't really mean SME anymore, does it? You're looking at like tens of millions of pounds of revenue for an SME often, and you're trying to condense all that to your 15-second elevator pitch. If you follow up on the phone and the journalist or producer picks up, you're like, right, okay, what's the top line from this? And quite often, journalists, both print and broadcast, have said to me, you know, how often do you get a press release? And there's something really good at the bottom.
Buried in it.
And so the trick is certainly to figure out, if I opened a newspaper or turned on the telly, what do I want to see? And I met a PR once who actually put it in those terms, and I was like, you're a genius. When I pitch something, I just imagine what I'd like to see when I open the newspaper, and I pitch that. Inspired.
Yeah, we say that to our team, actually. We're like, if you're pitching the Metro or you guys or FT or something, go to that website or publication or channel, work back from that. Like, is what you're pitching, can you literally visualize it in that space? And if you can't, it's either the wrong framing or the wrong space. And work back from that to get to your pitch, because if you're not doing that, you're not fitting the...
Before I came here, I asked Ian, I was like, go on then, what's your top bit of advice then?
Honoured.
So I can pass on what he said to me in passing as he went back to the office. He said, you know, do your research, do your homework. Don't pitch somewhere you've never watched before or you've never read what they've done before. The worst thing is obviously when you've got that template of, dear so-and-so, really loved your work on this particular article, but you forget to fill in what that article was. I got a press release once that was, dear Martin, I watched the episode of Mark Kleinman Live the other day. And my jaw dropped.
You're like, he got his own show.
I know. I was like, Ian, have you heard? I think there's a schedule change coming. And not only did she refer to it wrong once, but she got it wrong about three times in this pitch. And I was just like, wow, because you definitely haven't watched it. And they said that they had watched it. And they'd clearly just gone on my LinkedIn and seen, you know, what the guest was or whatever. Yeah, so do your homework, especially when it's quite a targeted pitch. Make sure that you know who you're dealing with and definitely do your research. So that's Ian's top tip for today.
Yeah, because whenever I put that at the beginning of a pitch, like when I only put it if I actually mean it, if I've read something, I'm like, that was generally a really, really interesting piece. I always feel like they must think I'm lying. I'm like, I did read it, I did enjoy it. Otherwise, I'm not going to put it because it feels so sycophantic. Yeah.
That trick does have a shelf life after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think you should only do it if you like actually can do it authentically.
So talk us through the show a little bit then. What sort of guests are you looking for?
Often there is a big breaking story of the day. So as an example, Bernard Looney stepped down as chief executive of BP. Obviously that morning we are looking for oil experts or BP experts, but generally there isn't an agenda. It's completely independent. It's completely, as long as it's not on the day news focused, we will approach anything that's newsworthy, and any press releases that are really good, we will look into them further. Any of them that don't have so much substance, you know, we will see through it, but we assess every pitch on its merit individually.
And are you striving sort of a bit of balance each day, sort of one kind of more entrepreneurial up-and-coming business balanced off with like a market story with a, you know, a results trend, something? Are you trying to go for kind of one of each type of thing in every slot?
Company results are our bread and butter because they're a really good snapshot into the economy. So, you know, you got the results of some big hospitality company that tells you how the hospitality trade is doing. Same with house builders or, you know, name your sector. So for that, results are really, really handy.
You do also occasionally do a slightly more fun one, for want of a better word. I'm thinking the puppies. So a puppy came into the studio to talk about puppy yoga, and also the one where it was like screen printing on hoodies. Are you also looking for like now and again something that's a little bit lighter?
So my aim was really to learn as much as I could about business, learn as much as I could about business journalism, but also try and bring some people into the fold that hadn't traditionally followed that brand of journalism. The vocabulary in financial journalism can be extremely difficult to get your head around, especially when you start delving into the markets and areas of sort of macro economy as well. It can be really tough to follow what's going on. I was very lucky in that I have a great boss and line manager who I can sort of throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks, and you know, whatever he thinks is not completely insane. So yes, let's do that. So I'm very, very lucky that I've got that. And yeah, a colourful story now and then. Yeah, it's TV. Picture stories are our bread and butter, you know, and not everything has to always be pensions and energy security and stuff like that. As vital as it is, once in a while, it is nice to try and bring a section of the audience into the fold that aren't traditional business news viewers.
How much does Ian shape the agenda for the show? Or is it very much you guys funneling up what you consider to be the best picks?
Ian gets really involved. He famously writes his own scripts, his own questions, does his own research. And when the dreaded question comes from PRs, what are the questions going to be?
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is always the biggest mistake you can make. And there are a lot. You know, we always have to say, well, you know, Ian writes his own questions. That's not for me to say. Well, when you've got someone with as much experience as he does on the show, you know, it'd be silly not to sort of follow his lead in that respect. It's a collaborative process. There's no one voice that kind of dominates all others. It's a lot of teamwork goes into it from top to bottom, and it's certainly one of the best environments I've ever worked in journalism, and Ian really does get stuck in, and he absolutely loves it, and it's a very encouraging, motivational place to be.
You mentioned about not asking about the questions in advance. How do you think PRs can best prepare their clients for a show like Ian King?
I suppose the industry term would be media training on your half. The other problem arises when a PR says, yeah, they're really keen to come on, but they don't want you to ask about this. And that is obviously the fastest way to make us want to ask about that.
Why?
And I think there is a way that you can prepare your clients for every eventuality and every question. That is down to you. That is down to their in-house team and agency teams. It is up to us to ask the questions that we think are pertinent, and to get them prepared for all those eventualities is your responsibility.
It's always really gratifying when, as the comms person, every question that gets asked is one that you've prepped them for.
Like, we will have to do better, clearly.
No, because normally I've got a list of like 30 questions that it could possibly be, and there's normally time for like four, right? So I'm really thinking broad.
And do you sort of share guests? So let's say we pitched you something which wasn't quite right for Ian King, but you knew would be really good for a colleague on another show. Do you kind of share pitches at all, or share intel?
So I used to work on the guest booking team for Sky. I book guests across all programs, Adam Bolton's, K's, Dermot's, but yeah, across all the programming. And I still like to think I have fairly good relationships with the people who are still on that team. And so, yeah, you know, often the planning desk will share good guests with us. Oh, that sounds a bit more businessy. Maybe it'd be good for Ian. Or we'll get a really good pitch and I'll be like, well, actually, that's probably a bit more breakfasty, or maybe a bit more for Sophie Ridge, or more political. And yeah, of course, there's communication that goes on across the entire newsroom.
And do you like pitches to come to you, Piers and CC, in the Ian King desk? Do you want them to come just to you? What's your preference to sort of minimise confusion, duplication across the team?
Attempting to minimise duplication is always good. It can never really be 100% avoided, mainly because broadcast rotors are so abnormal compared to your standard 9-to-5 Monday to Friday paradigm. I think a lot of it is up to us to set out of office emails as well, with the email address of whoever's working that day. That tends to be a good way of doing it. Also quite frustrating when you get phone calls from PRs on your day off and you're like, well, if you just emailed me today, you'd have got an out of office. Starting with an email is always good because it immediately gets the out of office out of the way, and then you know not to follow up with a phone call. You know, following up after a few hours is fine on the phone, but if you get an out of office, it's a good hint that maybe you won't get the most welcoming reception when you do call.
Yeah, how do you feel about PRs calling in general? Like, do you have an office phone, or do you only have sort of your personal mobile?
I do have a work phone.
Mm.
I'm not sure where it is. It's in a drawer somewhere at home. I use my personal number. I always have. I don't know if that's a mistake. I don't know if I'm going to regret that in several years' time. But for now, I find it easier to do it that way. I think in terms of pitching, like I said, best to always pitch on email at first because of the out of office thing. Because it can be quite hard and quite hard work and quite stressful doing broadcast news. And when you get a day off, you do just need to either sort of chill out or reacquaint yourself with your family or whatever you want to do. And calling a journalist on their day off is a pretty quick way to annoy them.
Can I ask you about the exclusive thing? And how often do you get people offering it? Because obviously the time slot doesn't lend itself super well to it being the first run for that story on the day. Are you annoyed if people book in broadcast earlier in the day, let's say CNBC, and don't tell you about it? Or would you assume they're doing other stuff unless they've offered you a broadcast exclusive?
Well, specifically with CNBC, it'd be a bit weird. This does happen sometimes where clients will go on CNBC Squawk Box in the morning and then they'll go away to God knows where, and then they'll be back again 2 hours later in the same green room again because we're in the same office, right? So once Murdoch sold us to Comcast, City Studio moved into the CNBC building. No, I don't think we can get that annoyed that PR agencies are trying to get their clients on TV. Obviously, it's lovely when you do get an exclusive, and it's great when you track down that story and you find the right person. But I'm not going to throw my toys out the pram if they're on the Today programme beforehand.
It's interesting because I was chatting with someone from Woman's Hour. They won't run you on two programmes on Radio 4, which is obviously fair enough. But they're like, if you've spoken about your new, you know, theatre production on Today, they're not going to book you for Front Row, which I think is really interesting, even if they're completely different audiences.
We wouldn't have one guest on Breakfast Show and then straight up on ours.
Yeah.
But we would barely ever put the same guest on telly twice in one day. Sometimes you've got like a really good American legal expert and Donald Trump is sort of up to something again and you need that sort of running commentary in that in that situation. Obviously, yes, we would get you back again or do what we call a prez friend, where you've got a sort of co-presenting guest who's there for the presenter to turn to for expertise and comment. But if you're pitching us Thought Park for Ian King's show, then if they also turn up on Breakfast, then yeah, that's a big problem. But if they're also on Radio 4 or ITV or Channel 4, you know, that's totally fair game.
Yeah, and I think it makes so much sense for TV because the viewers will say, I've literally seen this person before. Like, they were on 2 hours ago and it just does not work. And how mindful are you of trying to get both a gender and an ethnicity balance? Is it across the week or across the day?
As a broadcaster, I think it's our responsibility to reflect the population of the UK as it is. And, you know, it's our responsibility to seek out new and interesting voices that reflect, you know, all different backgrounds. And that is certainly something that we pay a lot of attention to. Yeah.
Are there any other sort of pet peeves that you would like to air whilst you've got us that PRs do?
Poor Zoom links. Yeah, stuff like that. Sometimes you get an email saying, please, can we do a test Zoom call beforehand? I'm like, you can connect to Zoom on like billions of computers out there.
Like, I've also got shows a day. Like, I know,
you don't need me to hop on your Zoom call for you. Or sometimes the connection's really bad and you're like, this could have been tested beforehand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm quite amused by camera angles of iPads and laptops that people do. I mean, I think one of them was quite a high profile shadow front bencher who did an interview on Kay's show. And you could see right up their nostrils. And I just thought, blimey.
My favourite thing as well is when you see someone go on broadcast wearing like stash, like a big logo on their T-shirt or like a big logo behind their head. It's just such...
Yes, big important thing to note, obviously, Ofcom rules state that we can't unduly promote brands. Mm-hmm. So we recently had a tech company, not to be too specific, who came in for a really good interview. It looked really great. The interviewee was brilliant. But they were wearing a T-shirt that had the logo of their very recognisable brand emblazoned all over the front of the shirt. And I had to go into the green room and I was like, I'm sorry, I can't let you on TV like this. So I think you had to swap shirts with someone else. So that's bad. Also, if you've got a client who's doing it via Zoom from the office, and behind them is like a giant press wall with sort of client across the back. The listeners can't see me doing these hand movements that I'm gestating behind my head right now. That's also undue prominence. So that's something to be mindful of for sure. I don't think that if you're in the studio wearing sort of checkered clothes and stuff matters much anymore. In the age of 4K, you know, you don't really have to be too concerned about a sort of checkered suit or something. So that might be a slightly outdated bit of advice now that we're in the age of high def.
Presumably you've had really frustrating things when people have like pulled guests at last minute or
there was a time when I was offered an interview with really quite a big company that was floated on the NASDAQ that was on every business page at the time, and we had their chief technical officer ready to go, and yeah, they pulled it at 9 o'clock at night the night before. I later found out that was because this interviewee gave a real stinker of an interview the day before. The press officer pulled him for all future interviews, and I thought, well, we would have been nice to him. But yeah, I mean, that's annoying, but again, this was a really quite a sizable player, so to some degree there's not a lot you can do.
Yeah, the power dynamic's slightly different there, isn't it?
Is it time for the quick fire questions?
I think it might be.
Okay, so this is just a fun little bit we like to do at the end of every podcast. It's not that scary, it's fine.
It's not going to be my favourite cheese. No. I haven't prepared for that one.
They're all lovely and media related. Google Meets or Zoom?
For Sky, we only support Zoom and Skype.
Digital or print?
Print.
Embargo or exclusive?
Both.
Email or phone?
Initially email.
News or features?
News.
LinkedIn or X?
X.
Dictaphone or iPhone?
I don't think I've owned a dictaphone since like 2004.
Yeah, fair enough. Broadcast or podcast?
Broadcast.
Pitch or press release?
Pitch, followed up by press release once you've sold it.
Written interview or telephone interview? Not too relevant for you on a broadcast desk.
Whenever I do my gaming interviews, it's normally on a sort of video call.
In-house or agency?
To be pitched by? Agencies just get it.
Yes.
Eventually, if you work in-house for too long, I'm going to annoy a lot of in-house PRs now, I'm very sorry, but you start to drink your own Kool-Aid sometimes, and you don't have that same objectivity that an agency has. And when you look at your client's sort of pitch that they want you to send, you're like, wow, this is really not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
That's what they pay you for. I mean, sometimes it feels like PR agencies are only employed so that the client can blame you when it all goes wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you get a much better sense of objectivity from an agency than you do from in-house. By the way, I've worked with lots and lots of very competent in-house PRs, and that is not meant to be a judgment on.
No, it was the right answer. You're 100% correct. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been super informative. I think you had already set the stage very well by your incredibly useful social posts. So hopefully this has given listeners another layer of insight into how you're running the show over there and how you like to be pitched. So hopefully here's to less emails of higher quality and some exclusives thrown in for you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. If we can achieve that, then everyone will be very happy.
Yeah, keep us posted. Thanks so much.